So grab your note sheets. I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. And welcome to Eastlake. We call it a church for everyone because it really doesn't matter about your past experience with religion, whether you're religious or not. It doesn't matter if you arrive today and you feel like a good person or not so good. Maybe it's going fantastic at home, or this week it was not so fantastic. Regardless of your past circumstances or the circumstances that you find yourself in today, we're here to, for one reason, to find out how much God loves us, to experience Jesus and know that he loves us. And so take your note sheet. This story of Jonah, he's a person that's running from God, and I'll give you a little review. You can go to the website, Eastlake Live, and catch the messages. You can watch them on video or listen again if you want to review and catch up if you didn't see them. Jonah is a Jewish person. He lives in Israel, and God comes to him and says, I want you to go to the city of Nineveh, which is 500 miles to the north. And Jonah gives God a big, fat no. I'm not doing it. No way, God. And instead, he goes 2,500 miles south to a resort area in Spain. So it's a time in your life when it's not an accident. You know God's speaking to you because we've all run at some point. Maybe some point in your life you ran a long ways away from God. Maybe you're back now. Maybe you're still running. Maybe there's some area of your life, just some specific area, and God wants to do something and make a change, and it's no way, God. And so you're running. So this story is everyone's story, where everybody runs at some point. And Jonah's running, and so he runs from God. He's on this boat. He's heading towards this resort area. I'm not doing it, God. 2,500, I mean, that's a huge no. And he gets on this boat, and he starts to head towards this resort area. And here's how the story goes, and it always goes this way. When I run from God, when I tell God no, when I don't address the responsibilities in my life that I'm supposed to do, when I know I'm supposed to do something and I don't do it, my life unravels. And so we talked in week one about Jonah. His life just starts to unravel, and the no that he gives God and the choices that he makes affects everybody around him in a negative way, and that's true too. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if when we said, hey, it's my life, I can do whatever I want, it didn't affect people around us, but it does. And so we see Jonah. Everybody's having a negative experience, and he tells God no, and his life starts to unravel. And here's the principle that we saw, is that when I go the opposite direction from God, it ends up worse. But here's the good news. You can run from God, but you can't outrun God. And so we had this huge fish that shows up. And Jonah is famous for this huge fish swallowing him. And if you come today and you're like, oh, man, that seems a little far-fetched to me. That's kind of like a nursery rhyme. I understand that because it is far-fetched. It's far-fetched to believe that a fish could swallow a person, and like, you know. But here's the thing about the story: Jesus believed in the story because he had a worldview that believed God could do anything. And I guess at some point, maybe if you say little prayers once in a while, maybe you need a new job, or you need a promotion, or you want to start a new business, and it seems really far-fetched that it's ever going to happen, but you still say prayers because somewhere deep inside, I guess you believe, and I believe, that God can do anything. Maybe you prayed this prayer, God, help me get these kids under control, or at least help me get under control, and it seems really super far-fetched, but the truth is you pray it because you believe that even in, like, God can do anything. I'll be seeing some people this week, a husband and a wife. They're in their early 60s, and they had the whole end of their life planned out, and now she has cancer in late stages. And I prayed for her today, and it's so far-fetched that anything's going to happen, but I still said a prayer. And the reason I prayed is I guess I believe that God can do anything. So Jesus believed that, and so he hears about a fish swallowing a man. He goes, well, God can do anything. Maybe it's not that far-fetched. And Jonah gets swallowed by this fish. And here's what it is. It's God's way of giving him a timeout. It's what we all need when we're running from God, to be able to stop and just ask ourselves this question. Is it working? The fish comes by and gets Jonah, and now he's in a really tight spot. He's all by himself. It's dark, and he gets a chance to ask himself this question. Is it working to run away? Is it working to run away from the things I know I'm supposed to do? Is it working to run away from something that's supposed to happen at job? Is it working to run away when God asks me to do something? Is it working? And Jonah decides, no, it's not. My life's unraveling. It's actually worse to go in the opposite direction. So he does something we can all do. And please just make a note in your margin. Everyone can turn to God before you trust God. There's lots of people running from God that you know in your life, and they're running and they're running and they're running. I don't even realize why they're running anymore, but they don't think they can turn back, because here's the idea. If I disagree with God, well, certainly I have to run from him. And Jonah discovers this great thing, that you can actually turn to God and pray, and he will hear your prayers, even if you don't trust him. In fact, part of taking a step to being able to trust God is first to turn to God. And here's what he discovers, and it's amazing. Jonah discovers that God is willing to give him another chance. I'm sure he's surprised when he turns back to God and he says a prayer. And God says, Jonah, I'm not done with you. I still have a purpose for you. I still have a plan for you. It's the big idea this weekend. You can write in your notes, God still has a plan for me. That's how we'll wrap up the story of Jonah. Now he finds out God still has a plan for him. So now he heads towards Nineveh, 500 miles on foot. He's on the road for weeks and weeks and weeks. His skin is probably all bleached out because he's inside a fish. Who knows which way his hair is going? And he finally arrives in Nineveh, and he's one of those crazy people. Maybe you've seen him walking around with a sandwich board and a bullhorn. The world's coming to an end. God's not happy. You better change your ways. And how do you think the people would have responded to him? How would you have responded to him? I mean, he's one of those guys. And I mean, it's crazy when you read the story, the people respond. And they listen. Now, let me give you a bit of history on it, because we know some things from history, from complete other documents. Three things were going on that Jonah had no idea. Here's one of them. In this city of Nineveh, two plagues had swept through. And hundreds, even thousands of people had died. So just about everybody had a family member or a friend or somebody that they worked with that had died in this plague, and nobody could do anything about the plague. Disaster sweeps through my life, and I can't do anything. Layoffs came. I got sick. My wife got sick. There's not one thing I can do about it. It just sweeps through, and people get hurt. That's one thing that was happening, and it happens to us. The second thing is there was three armies that had aligned, and they're 100 miles away. We know this from history. And they're going to sweep down through Nineveh and all the way down south, and they're going to wipe out everybody. And the Ninevites know these armies have come together, and they're thinking, will our walls hold up? Will our city be safe? Can our army protect us? And that's this right here. I see something coming in my future, and I'm wondering, am I going to be able to do that? I'll be graduating soon. Will I be able to take on the next part of my life? I'm going to be getting married soon. My kids are going to become teenagers. I'm going to be retiring. That's when you see something in your future and you wonder, am I going to be able to handle that? And then here's the third one. This is kind of an odd one, but it happens in our lives. We know from history that there was a total eclipse of the sun at this exact same time. And they were really superstitious, like us. And they see this eclipse of the sun, and it never meant something good. And it's when you say this to yourself, why is all this crap happening? Why is everything against me? I've got bad luck. It's like when you say, karma's working against me. All that was occurring. You just get up in the morning, and everything that happens, you're just like, gosh, everything, nothing's going right for me. That was all happening for them. And Jonah didn't know any of it. Now, here's the lesson. Listen now. Think of people that you don't think are at all interested in Jesus. They are so far away. Here's the lesson. God is often working behind the scenes to prepare their heart to hear his message. And we don't have any idea. He comes and says, this is what you want. And we're like, are you kidding, God? That's what happened with me. When Chuck Layden took the time to tell me that Jesus was a real person that died on the cross and was resurrected and loved me, I sent every message to him 33 years ago now. Every message, Chuck, I don't want to talk about it. I do not want to be one of those religious fanatics. No. I gave him no indication that God was working behind the scenes in my life, that my life was unraveling, that my relationships had, my finances, that I was on the road. I had no indication. All he did was invite me to church. I went one time and Jesus did the rest. Who's in your life and you look at them and go, no chance, and maybe God's working behind the scenes. He always is. That's why he's working behind the scenes, because honestly, there could be a family member, it could be a husband, it could be a sister, and it's hard to have hope because you're like, no, it's never going to happen. It's getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And the truth is, God's working behind the scenes. And Jonah's got to be shocked. He's like, they're responding. They really want to change their lives. They're going to do it. And it even gets as far as the king responding. Listen to this. Grab your notes. I'll read it to you. Listen to what it says there. By decree of the king and his nobles, so a public announcement goes out. A wild man shows up. You have to change your ways because God loves you. Here's what the king says. Do not let people or animals, herds or flocks, he's not missing anything, taste anything, calls a fast. Do not let them eat or drink. But let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. That's what you wear when you go to a funeral. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent with compassion and turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. I mean, the king says, hey, we're all changing our ways. I mean, we get our circumstances and we understand we need to change our ways. And when you read this, it's sort of like a classic blueprint of how you do change your ways. I mean, the first thing is they admit that they're wrong. And then the second thing is they admit that they're sorry. They put on sackcloth. We're really, really sorry, God. And then they cry out for forgiveness. And then they say, we're changing our ways. Now, if you want to see something change in your life, or maybe you're in a relationship, and this has happened to you, someone's come and they want to restore the relationship, and they come to you, and they admit that they did something wrong, and it feels so good at first. It's like, finally, you know, they admit that they did it wrong. I'm so sorry that I did. And that was me wrong. So now they say they're sorry. So I admit I did it wrong, and I say they're sorry. And then they leave. And you have this initial feeling like, oh, that's awesome. They admitted it was wrong, and they said they were sorry. But then there's this, like, uneasiness inside and this emptiness inside. And you're wondering, well, how come I'm not okay with them now? Well, because it's not complete. Maybe they even say, would you forgive me? I'm really sorry. I know I did that wrong. Would you forgive me? And you don't hold a grudge against me. And then you say, yeah, I forgive you. Then they leave, and you're uneasy. You might be in a relationship right now. Honestly, you might. Or you may have done it to someone else. And you've done those three things. But the Ninevites did one more thing, number four. They said, it won't happen again. See, if someone steals my wallet and takes my money at work, and then they come back a little later and say, hey, you know what, I'm the guy that stole your wallet. And I am so sorry. It's like a girl that did it. I'm so sorry. And would you forgive me for stealing your wallet? And I know she has new boots on and a new do and her nails are all bling. And then she just leaves. I'm like, well, that was great that she did. That feels really good. But until I start to go, hey, where's my wallet? And I start to wonder this. Are you going to steal from me again? Because nothing gets better in the future until someone says, it stops now. I will not do that again. I am changing my... Who are you in relationship with? And it just keeps cycling over and over again, over and over again. Over. It keeps happening, keeps happening, keeps happening. Because they miss the fourth step. They never say like the Ninevites. They never do it. They never say, you know what? I'm not doing that to you again. They never do. And so they do it again. And they admit it. And they say, I'm sorry. And you keep getting your wallet stolen. And the Ninevites aren't like that at all. And let's see how God responds to that type of change. Let's see what he says here. It says, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, and I'm asking the question now, do any of you here, are you in a situation with someone where you have admitted some things, I'm sorry, please forgive me, but you've never made a commitment to the future to change your ways and stop? You haven't done that yet. Here's what God says. God saw it, saw what they did. He turned from their evil ways. He relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. That's a happy ending. Because that's what happens when I tell someone it's not going to happen again. God gets in behind it and it doesn't. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in these shoes before. Maybe you have, because this is really good news. You finally get it all, and you do the whole entire thing, and you come to your boss, and you say, it's never going to happen again. I'm so sorry. I'm changing my ways. And your boss says, it's too late. You're still fired. Or the girl says, it's too late. I'm breaking up with you. Or the guy says, it's too late. I'm leaving. Or whatever. Have you ever been in a situation like that where you finally came to your senses, you finally admit it, you finally change your ways, and it's too late? The person on the other side says, it's just too late. I'm done. No, we can't be friends anymore. I already defaced you from Facebook. You're out. That's hard. It's hard to go all the way, and then have the person on the other side. And God's not like that. They go all the way, and God says, okay, we're back together. So if you've been thinking of turning, maybe at some point in your life you went all the way and humbled yourself, and now you're thinking about doing it again, you say, no way, because last time I did it, it was so painful to find out it was too late anyways, not with God. And we know how he responds. Let's see how Jonah responds. Here's our hero of the story. Let's look at this right here. But to Jonah, this seemed very wrong. Circle that. And he is angry. So now we got Jonah here. He's mad about it. He prayed to the Lord. This is great. Isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? This is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. And so now we understand what's been going on the whole time. Jonah doesn't like these people. They're the enemies of the Jews. And it's like he says this prayer to God. I knew you would do this, God. I knew you would do this. This is why I didn't want to come here in the first place. I knew if they changed, I know what you're like. I knew it, God. And here's what Jonah's afraid of. Jonah's afraid that God will act like God. Because he knows God. And what does he know? Well, let's read it. We'll keep reading. He goes on. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love. A God who relents from sending calamity. God takes no joy in your suffering. He doesn't want to see you get hurt and beat up and bruised and banged up. He takes no joy in that. And Jonah knows that. He's like, God, I didn't want these people to get compassion and mercy from you. I didn't want this to happen for them. And if there was ever a verse in the Bible, listen to this please closely. If there was ever a verse in the Bible, if you're running at some area of your life, if there was ever a verse that's for you, if you have ever wondered, have I screwed it up too bad? Is there any chance for me? This is your verse. Because when you stop and turn, this is what awaits you. And the reason a lot of people keep running, and the reason a lot of people out in this area of the city are running, and they won't even give church a chance, they want nothing to do with any of it, is because they're afraid if they turn back to God, they're afraid of the response that they will get. This is their verse. This is our verse. God says, you know me, Jonah. And Jonah says, I know. I didn't want any of that to happen for him. I don't like him. And so let's see what happens between him and God, because now the Ninevites are over here, and now we're going to have a little thing what goes on. Now the Lord, he says to him, now, Lord, take my life away, for it is better for me to die than to live. Jonah knows he can't go home. This is interesting. He's Jewish. So if he goes back to Israel, everybody knows that he's helped the Ninevites, and everybody hates the Ninevites. Nobody wants anything to do with the Ninevites. And Jonah can't go back home, and he's angry, and he's mad now. And that happens sometimes. There's going to be a time in your life that you're going to make decisions to follow Jesus a certain direction, and people in your life, your family, is not going to like it. And it's not like Jonah could hide it, and you won't be able to hide it either. What are you doing this weekend? You're all going to come over to a church picnic and hang out. Because someone in your family does not like the direction you're going with Jesus. They just don't. You're going to be like Jonah, probably angry and mad, like, why does it have to be this way? Because you're not going to be able to hide it. There will always be people in your family that will not appreciate your relationship with Jesus because it threatens them. And Jonah's angry. He's like, I can't even go home now. I didn't want you to be nice to him, God. I knew you were going to do that. And now I can't even go back home because everybody's going to be angry at me. So he's like wedged in. So let's read the rest of it. But the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry? This is awesome. I don't know if you ever find yourself here. Jonah, do you not remember the time that you were in the fish? Jonah, do you not remember the time that I was kind and compassionate to you? And because, you know, I helped you out, Jonah. Oh, I see. It's okay for me to love and be compassionate to you, Jonah, but you don't want me to love and be compassionate to the Ninevites. Is it right for you to be angry? Well, that's a great question to ask yourself from time to time. Is it right for you to be angry? Is it right for me to be angry when some other salesperson gets a sale and I thought I should have got it? Is it right for me to be angry because I don't have the type of house or car? Is it right for me to be angry that my kids aren't behaving? Is it right for me to be angry? He just asks a question, that's all. He doesn't say one thing to him. He says, Jonah, really? Seriously? Honestly, you were inside of a fish, man. Dude. But you don't want me to love these people? It's okay when I love you, when you were all rescued and all that, but you don't want me to love them. Is it all right for you to be angry? I think we can all admit we get angry at stuff that really is a little hard to defend. Let's keep reading. Here's Jonah. He doesn't even answer God, by the way. Look at the next part. Jonah had gone out and sat down at a place east of the city. There he made himself a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. So he's still hoping now. He's still hoping. He's saying, man, I just hope that you judge them. I hope I got through to you. And we keep reading. He's just sitting there. And then the Lord provided a leafy plant. This part gets a little strange. Then the Lord provided a leafy plant and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head and to ease his discomfort. And Jonah was very happy about the plant. Yay, God, you're awesome. It's so great when you're kind and compassionate to me. I'm happy. But at dawn the next day, God provided a worm. Notice God's bringing all the stuff, which chewed the plant so that it withered. When the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind, and the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. He's a wimp. I wanted to die, he said. It would be better for me to die than to live. He's acting like a little kid here in this last little part. But God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? So listen now. First he says, Jonah, have you forgotten everything I've done for you? You forgot all that kind of stuff? You forgot all of that? And now he asks him another question. Is it right for you to be angry about the plant? And here's Jonah's problem. He thinks he deserves good things from God. He wants to be, here's what Jonah wants to be. Jonah wants to be favored. He wants to be favored, and he believes he's favored because he's a part of this Jewish nation. And the Jewish people, they believe that they're chosen by God. But listen, being chosen by God is different than being God's favorite. But they have now become these people that think we're God's favorite, and we have the big church everybody goes to, and we have the big temple, and we're the big ones that God takes care of. And God loves us and takes care of his compassion to us. He does everything for us. We deserve God to do stuff for us because we're his favorite. I deserve God to take care of me because I work really super, super hard. I deserve to win the argument because she started it this time. I deserve God to take care of me because I'm working 60 hours a week. I don't know how you do it. You just tell me. How do you get to a place where you feel like you deserve God to do something for you? I deserve God to do something for me because I have changed my ways so bad. I used to drink and cuss and smoke all the time, and now I just cuss a little bit and drink a little bit and don't smoke. I mean, I deserve him to do something for me because I've changed a lot. That's Jonah. I deserve you to do that plant. I came all the way up here from my town. And God asks him a simple question. He says, do you deserve it, Jonah? Is that what our relationship is based on? You have to earn it from me and then I give it to you, and if other people don't, they don't get it. And Jonah, like, he's going ballistic now. He's angry. And let's see what happens. This is the last part of the story. Here's Jonah's response. Jonah, do you deserve, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? And Jonah says, it is, he said. I'm so angry, I wish I were dead. That's like a toddler talks that way. They can't have their rattle. But the Lord said, you've been concerned, and circle that word. And here's the key to the whole story of Jonah. You have been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. And should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left? And then this little odd statement, and also many animals. It's nice that God didn't forget the pets and everything. And I'm not really sure why that part's in there, that last little part. Unless he's sort of taking a jab at Jonah. Unless he's saying this. Unless this is the whole point of the story. He's saying, Jonah, do you know what? Your concerns are different than my concerns. You're concerned about a plant that's here today and gone tomorrow, and you're not at all concerned about these people. And Jonah, they're like children. That's what he means when he says right hand from the left. Little kids don't know that. He says, I know they sin, and they've done all kinds of crazy stuff they shouldn't do. But Jonah, they're like little kids. Most of the stuff they did wrong, they didn't even know they were doing it wrong, Jonah. You don't have any concern for them. You know who I am. You know what I'm like. You know you couldn't outrun me. But these are like little kids, and you don't even care about them. You're not even concerned. You're so preoccupied with your plant. And that's where it gets a little close to home for me. Because sometimes things are small, but I become so concerned about them. I go to the restaurant with Clarice. We're having our date night. I look at the menu for 15 minutes, and I order the same thing I always do, a cheeseburger and French fries. And I asked a simple thing. Could you make the cheeseburger well done and my fries crispy? And 20 minutes later, my hamburger arrives half raw and my French fries are soggy. And I become so concerned. I'm like, this is hard-earned money and I can't even believe this. How difficult it is to dip the thing in. I'll come back there. I mean, I become so concerned because my French fries are not cooked the way I want them to be and my cheeseburger isn't the way. And I completely forget that there's a server in front of me with a life and a destiny of eternity and I don't even think about them. And I have a moment with them. It's okay to be concerned about it. I mean, it's not like it's going to go away, but how do I stand in the concern, and what am I more concerned about? Ladies that get your nails done all the time, go to the manicure, get your nails done, and then they do a really crappy job on your nails. You're like, I ain't leaving with this. You expect me? These are not looking Hollywood, girl. And all of a sudden, you're way more concerned with your $25 nails or $600 nails or whatever they are, way more concerned with that than the person that's standing in front of you. And God says, Jonah, it's a plant. Robin, it's French fries. Girl, it's your nails. What about the person? Did you even think that you could see them again in another setting? Did you even give a moment of thought that you could have built a bridge while you were at this restaurant? There may have been one thing you could have said, just one thing. I go to the dry cleaners. I tell them every single time, don't put a crease in my pants. These are flat pants. Do not put a crease. They bring it out. There's a big, huge crease. It's like, ah! It's like, how could anyone do it? And I'm going off ballistic, and this better come out next time I come. And I see the same person every time. And I'm not concerned at all about them because my pants that I'm going to wear two or three times and bring them back again are just such a huge deal. But there's an opportunity there, and I'm missing it. I could be completely different with them. What if I was the one customer that day that they went, what is it with that guy? We screw his pants up, and he seems to deal with it awesome. What is it with him? And what if I went in one time, and God gave me a little nudge and said, listen, just toss him one of the little cards, tell him about church, say, hey, you guys always work really super hard, and it's hot in here, dude. And listen, I go to this church, it's just that everyday people, we just want to know Jesus loves us. Check it out sometime. What if? Oh, no. No, the crease is a quarter of an inch too far to the right. I'm much more concerned about that. It gets a little close to home when you read the story. And you start to understand about Jonah. He's freaking out about a plant. And how am I doing? Now let's look at a couple ways of applying this so you can look in your notes. The very first one, God works behind the scenes to prepare people. You know, the disciples, they were always inviting people to come and see Jesus, to be in his presence. And one of the things that we're always saying, invite people to church, it's not because there's a commission in it for you. It's not that we get a scalp or a notch on our belt. It isn't we're trying to be the big, big church. Woo, look at us. It isn't any of those things. It's because we believe that we're the body of Christ. And if people get in the presence of Jesus, he'll do the rest. They were always bringing people to Jesus, his physical body then, bringing people to Jesus because they just said, if I can get my friend or my aunt or my brother, remember now, if I could just get them into his presence, he'll do the rest. And we believe we're the body of Christ now. Jesus isn't walking around with a physical body anymore, but he has us. And if we can just get them in his presence, that's all. Just get them in his presence. But he'll do the rest. And we know from our story that he's working behind the scenes. When I was in college, I was going to Bible college. I caught a job in a restaurant as a waiter. It was a small staff, kind of a mid-range, kind of a, not upper scale, but kind of steakhouse restaurant. And the owner was there all the time because it's small staff. And I got to know him a little bit. His name was Barry Trudeau. The restaurant was called Trudeau's. And so I'm working there about 3 months, and God starts to kind of give me the nudge. Invite him to church. I'm like, no way, God. That's awkward, and it's going to be weird, and he's my boss, and I need this job. Find someone else to do it, you know? It's like, I'm not doing it, God. Nudge, 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 nudge. And finally, I'm like, okay, you know? And so I went to him and said, hey, Barry, I go to this church. It's not that far from here. And you probably know, I think you know I'm in Bible college. I just want to say, hey, man, if you ever want to check it out, I'll meet you there and hang out with you. And that's it. And he didn't really even say much. And then 3 weeks later, I see him walk in the door, and I'm shocked. And he takes a seat and goes through the whole thing, and what's up, and yeah, hey, and goes, and I see him at work again. He asks me a couple questions, and the next weekend, he's again, and next week again, and 3, 4, 5, 6, he's again, and we start talking at work, and he starts to ask me more questions, and then a little while later, Barry decides he's giving his life to Jesus, and he starts his own journey with Jesus Christ. And I was like, huh, you're smart. But I didn't know God was working behind the scenes. Everything looked great to me. He had a great car. He had a pretty girlfriend. He had this restaurant. He seemed like everything was perfect in his life. But behind the scenes, later he told me my girlfriend had broken up with me and just walked out on me. The restaurant was struggling. I didn't know if we were going to make it financially. And my key staff member that I'd put years into to run the restaurant flamed out on alcohol and just walked out on me. And that was all going on behind the scenes when God was nudging me, say, just invite him to church. Why? So we could have a bigger church? No, man. So he could be in the presence of Jesus Christ. And when he got in the presence of Jesus, after a little while, he said, I want to do that too. Now, who's in your life? And it's okay that you don't know what God's doing behind the scenes, because he doesn't want you to know, because if you knew, you'd probably screw that up. You don't have to know. All you have to do is obey. Invite him, because he is working. The person that you, the one you don't like the most, the one that you love the most and you think you never will, please hear this. This story is for you. Get this, please, if you hear anything. Jesus is working behind the scenes. Now, here's one more thing. Write this down. God wants his concerns to become my concerns. And just jot this down. If you're wondering what the definition of spiritual maturity is, there it is right now. Very, very simply. Spiritual maturity is when God's concerns become my concerns. So about 3 months ago, this family comes into where I work, and they're going to buy a car, and they want to do this thing called an in-and-out. In an in-and-out, everybody hates to do them because they show up with their used car and they want to sell it to somebody else. And in this case, it was their son. They want to sell the car. And I hope it doesn't freak you out that I work for a living, because that's what we do right now. I came here to start a church and I work for a living. And so I have the job as a car salesman, which everyone hates them. They did a survey recently, and the survey said that most people would rather go to the dentist. So my life is, I'm a car salesman every day. People don't like that one. And the other one, I'm a Christian pastor, and we know how people feel about them. So that's my life. But I'm working for a living. So they come in, and they want to buy a car, and they're going to trade their car in. They're going to do this in and out, which is a huge amount of work that you have to do just so they can get the tax credit. So it's normally people that are really, really super thrifty anyways and anal that do this type of thing. Most people are like, whatever, but no, not these people. So in they come, and they're going to sell the car to their son-in-law. So they're in their mid-60s. I've never met the son-in-law. He comes rolling in with his wife, and the first thing he says, I hope this doesn't take more than about 10 minutes. I've got things I've got to do. He sits down at my desk, and I'm thinking, whoa, dude, you got something coming, because this is like an hour and a half on nitro speed. This is a real complex. There's paperwork to figure out. I said, well, it's going to take a little longer than that, like about 10 times. You know, try to throw a little humor out there. 10 times? I got about 15 minutes. I'm a realtor. I can sell an entire house in a half hour. You know, and everybody starts getting tight around my desk, and I'm thinking, oh, great, I get the class A jerk here, you know. And so then, and for the next half hour, every move I make, everything I do, can't you speed it up a little bit? Time is money. I can't believe it's taking you so long. Now he's insinuating that the reason it's taking so long is because I'm an idiot. He even went and saw a manager. So I came in here in good faith to buy this car. I can't believe I'm waiting so long. And underneath it is like, I'm Mr. Important, don't you understand? And I'm at my desk. And you know what? The whole time he's with me, I'm thinking, I wonder what's up with this dude. I mean, God, what's happened in his life? What, you know, Lord, what are you concerned about? Because I want to be concerned like you're concerned. I mean, what's happening? Not a chance. I wanted to rip his face off. I never even thought about any of that stuff. All I thought about is you're a class A jerk. I can't even believe you're acting this way. And in my mind, you know, I'm smiling on the outside, you know, but in my mind, I'm thinking, and I look at the wife, I think, I feel sorry for you. You're going to be married to this guy. And she's completely embarrassed, and the adults are embarrassed, and the entire thing's going on like this. And here's the thing. Here's my point. When I'm with people like that, I don't even think about what God is concerned about. I went home that day, and I didn't even say a prayer for him. And I'm ashamed of that. Because obviously, this dude has got a huge thorn in his heart. And something's going on, and God's concerned about him. But, oh, I was way too busy on how I was being treated to even consider what God wanted to occur. I wanted to broom his butt out of there as fast as I could. Instead of just taking a moment saying, God, this is a divine appointment. What are you trying to cause today? What should my concern be, Lord? And that's the story of Jonah, because he did not like these people. And he was not concerned at all in what God was concerned about. And Jonah, you know, God's got a plan for him. And here's what it is right here. He said, Jonah, the Ninevites need you. And Jonah, you need the Ninevites because something's gone haywire between you and I because you don't know what I'm concerned about. You're concerned about all different types of things, but they're not my concerns, Jonah. He's not just trying to get the Ninevites to say yes. He's trying to get Jonah to say yes. Who's in your life and you wonder, is God working behind the scenes at all, or maybe you never think about it? Who's the jerk in your life? Maybe it's a lot worse than a car deal. Maybe they've done something very, very painful. It's so far beyond the boundaries to you. Could you stop for a moment and let God show you how concerned he is for them and bring you to a yes? Because that's the bottom line right in your notes. The Lord helps everyone say yes. That's what the whole story of Jonah is about. It starts with Jonah saying, no, God. And, you know, we don't know how it ends for Jonah. He never writes the ending. But we get to write our own ending. How will it end for you?